Hey, what's up, guys? What you're about to hear is a video I did with a buddy of mine, Joey, my tech guy. I've talked about him a lot on the show, and he's actually hanging right there, and hope you enjoy the video.
What's up, guys? I'm excited about this one. This one is close to my heart because I'm talking to one of my favorite individuals. I've mentioned Joey on the show a couple of times. Joey is a great friend as well as my tech guy. He's done a lot for me in the tech space, as well as allowing me to understand things a little bit better. So, Joey, man, welcome to the show, man.
Oh, it's good to be here.
What's up, man?
Thanks for having me.
Let's kick back. I mean, this is holiday 2018, right? I definitely want to have a conversation with you about share your comic book story with the listeners and the viewers, man. I definitely want to hear your take on life and some of the things that you experienced to get the knowledge that you have as it relates to tech and stuff like that.
Well, I was on a field trip and I got bit by a radioactive spider.
How fun was that?
What?
How fun was that?
Well, it would have been good, but see, the thing is, I got a really crappy power, so I can only start flash mobs to really bad 80s tracks.
Okay. So what happened? What's the real story? How did you get all the insight that you have and the training that led you to, you know, the tech guy that you are today?
I've been using computers since I was four. They were monochrome. You had a command line. You needed to learn how to use it because that's the only way you could use a computer at the time. And just grew up with it, spent many a night. My dad got a Pentium 1 that was in the garage for a while, and we used that with Windows 95 and dial-up internet. Continue with that through high school and got to some media production stuff around the same time. And then deciding when everyone's trying to figure out what to do for college, I was like, oh, this is, you know, just clearly something that is going to be a viable field to work in. So I went to college for it and learned a bunch of stuff at Suffolk and then coasted my way to a 3.8 over at Briarcliff, which has since closed, so I can, you know, trash talk them now.
It is?
Oh, yeah.
They closed?
I didn't even know they closed. Yeah, they closed.
They closed last year.
I'm telling you, my dude, you could have gotten...
Wow.
I'm sure you have houseplants that could have gotten on the honor roll with the level of requirements that they had.
That's crazy. I didn't even realize that they closed last year.
Oh, trust me. The irony of my student loan debt outlasting the college is not lost on me.
So what are you running now? So I see you have a PC in front of you. So what is the fancy PC? Yeah. Talk about the specs on that.
Yeah, this is Elsa.
Elsa.
Yes. They all get names. So Elsa is a Core i7. Let's actually pull up the Specy report. I forget which model it is.
Okay. While he's pulling up specs for Elsa, I have Tiny. Mm-hmm. Tiny right now has been a pride and joy in making sure the show production, OBS, and the streaming stuff that I've been doing for Twitch at Uriah, that's been really, really smooth. Did the Windows 10 partition thing on one drive, and then I did the Ubuntu on the other drive. Mm-hmm. I want to swap or clone the Windows 10 onto an SSD. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I had that conversation with you. I don't think we really talked about that, but yeah. Those are some of the things I was thinking about. Yeah, so what do you got with Elsa?
This is a Core i7-9700K. I could overclock it, but then, you know, my battery would not last going from one room to the next.
Okay.
32 gigs of RAM. It's got a GeForce 1060. I have a pair of SSDs and a pair of spinning disks for a total of 4 terabytes of storage.
Okay. And there right now?
Yes.
Sweet.
Yep. It's got USB-C ports. It's got mini display port outputs. It has 144 hertz display. Yep. This was the budget model.
So why Origin? Because I know we've had that conversation in the past, right? Always said, you know, I can get Asus because I like Asus stuff. I realize that you've used a lot of Asus routers. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you use if they have switches or anything like that, because I know Netgear does switches because you gave me that recently for the 24 port Netgear stuff. So why Origin versus the other machines for you? Mm-hmm.
A couple of reasons. First off is the fact that Origin machines are very serviceable. I like being able to swap out my own parts, do my own upgrades. Even one time, actually, when I about a year after I got Tiny, The graphics card died, so I was able to have them just overnight me a new graphics card, and I put it in.
Okay.
You know, with a lot of the other machines, they'll solder that kind of stuff onto the motherboard. And even if it's not, you know, all the way down where, like, RAM and hard drives are now just baked into the motherboards now, just having a more modular feel to it makes life a lot easier there. I have been very happy with the customer service in general, the people who I've spoken to. The people who you call on the phone for tech support are down the hall from the people who hand-assembled your machine.
That's dope.
I am. You know, they've always taken very good care of me. When I've had an issue, they've worked to solve it. My last laptop I got had a couple of things that were not the kind of things that you'd think about. Things like that, the way that the touchpad button was angled, that I'd always be right clicking it. I always like hit it and right click it, even if,
on which model?
Not the one before this. There was okay. A short lived period where I had one because what they were very good about, like, allowing me to swap it out for a couple of reasons. That just was like a showstopper. So they let me exchange it for stuff, and they were able to really just make sure that I was a satisfied customer. Like, they're very, very dedicated like that.
Okay.
So I just don't find that sort of customer service around. So I like having those people in my corner. I don't always need tech support, but when I do, I really don't want to have to answer the question whether or not I've tried turning it off and on again. You know? So I like the fact that I have, you know, techs who are able to work with me on stuff, and I've always been very appreciative of that.
Okay, so the NAS that you built, because yes. Joey built me a NAS recently, mm-hmm. and from what I understand, it's at its final stage of completion.
Yeah, right? It's ready. You're taking it home tonight.
I'm taking it home tonight. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's pretty dope. Okay, so setting it up and stuff like that, you still have to come through, right? For me, yes. To understand the
we got to give you the nickel tours to how right works and things.
Right, how FreeNAS works. Okay, so you've done these before.
Yes,
this is not your first one. I know for a fact that that's not your first one. So why would someone want a NAS at their home studio?
I'm so glad you asked.
Of course, you know, we got to talk about it. You know, because this is definitely a tech centric conversation. So talk to me about that.
Well, it's always nice to have a place to put your digital stuff. At some point, having a set of externals only goes so far, especially because if data doesn't exist in three places, it doesn't exist. So if you only have your data on an external and it's not backed up to another external, I guess, like, if you're actually backing up, that's just the most time-consuming thing. That's quite annoying, and which means that a lot of people just don't back their data up. So I have, we miss this actually in the origin story, is the fact that I do work for an IT consulting firm professionally. So I do work with anywhere from a handful of a single machine in a home office all the way to multi-site networks, even interstate networks. I have a couple of those that I'm that I work to do this. So I have this discussion day in and day out, and people very commonly think in terms of that an external is a backup drive, not an external.
External, you know, is a backup drive.
Well,
I'm just repeating what you said while I wait for the rest.
No. An external is a backup drive if it is a duplicate of data that lives somewhere else. Just moving on to an external because you're running out of space on your computer doesn't count because that data doesn't live in a second place anymore.
Got it.
So they say, oh, but this is my backup. I'm like, it's still a hard drive.
And this is what you call the redundancy stuff, right?
Right. So So externals are great, and you know, and I'm always, you know, a fan of them. But there's a point at which they start to become a bit of a challenge. Also, there are things that can be done on a NAS that simply can't be done on an external drive. Because an external drive is just a bucket of storage. I'm trying to think. One of the things that I have, you can run, FreeNAS specifically supports jails that you can use for what's called a FAM stack, FreeBSD, Apache, MySQL, PHP, which is a very common set of components to run a web server.
Right, which is 27.5% of the web runs on what?
At what level? That's...
Well, I mean, give me a level. Basic servers are running
Some run Linux. I mean, this is running a BSD base, which is they're cousins, but they're not. But they're not direct descendants. That's an entirely separate discussion.
Fair enough.
You know, Apache is a very popular web server, but Nginx also very popular. Lighty and a handful of folks still use IIS for things. So PHP is popular. Python's gaining some ground in there. So 27% of what? That's a very loaded question.
Right. Intentionally.
Right. Oh.
Yeah, intentionally. Yeah, intentionally.
All right.
Because I wanted to see where you were going to go with that.
Got it.
Yeah.
All right. See, he didn't give me a list of things to talk about beforehand. No.
No, this is just like you're receiving it. Yep. We're just having a conversation about documenting. We've been hanging out for a while, man.
It's been a while.
It's been a minute.
Yeah.
Okay. So, how many drives?
Before we get to that, just because you asked about the things that you can do.
Right.
Sorry. So I just want to tie a bow in that.
Tie that. Okay. Tie that up.
Is that anything that would kind of run on that stack, one of the things I have is you use LastPass. I personally don't trust other people's hard drives with my passwords.
Right.
So that runs on such a virtual machine. You can run things like transmission for downloading your Linux distros can run on there directly, so you don't have to leave your laptop on. Your Plex Media server can run on there directly without anything. And
IRC chat stuff, right?
There actually is a headless client that's kind of cool with that, so you can do those sort of things. You can run with a little extra. I'm a fan of Rocket Chat, which is a Slack kind of clone.
Do people use Kodi on a NAS, or that's not necessary?
You don't want to run Kodi on the NAS because the NAS tends to run headless. You run a power cord and a network cord in it, and if you have a video coming out of it, it's because you're trying to troubleshoot something. So you don't typically...
So is it like a big Raspberry Pi, or is it... Maybe that's a bad comparison in terms of... So Raspberry Pi, you can throw software on there, and then you allow it to do different things. You can also connect different components onto the particular unit, and then make it do things.
That's strained a little bit.
In
so far as that, you start with something. Really, what I would say that a NAS is it's something that lives in a network that stores a bunch of stuff.
Right.
The only way to really do that on a Raspberry Pi is going to hit bottlenecks very, very quickly.
Okay.
But what a NAS does allow you to do is just that sort of bulk storage really can't do in a Pi.
Okay.
And then you can have it be as simple as a really big external drive that just has a folder share, or it can be as elaborate as running multiple applications on it that you want running 24/7.
Okay, so setting up the systems to automatically manage, like you said, your Linux distros and push stuff and move stuff. What is the interface that allows you to do those?
Well, a FreeNAS actions? Has a web user interface that they have different plugins that are prepackaged instances of these
on that OS. If you want to say that, right?
Right. So you can essentially pick which one you want, click install, give it a couple of parameters for your IP and where you want it stored.
Do you have like faves that you look packages that you already know that on this system it's getting that? Or is it per request of the person that you're building it for?
Well, I only build them for the cool people, so you should feel particularly special.
I'm cool.
Okay.
I made the coolest. Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. So did you already know what I
took a guess. I mean, Plex is on there for you.
Plex is, yeah. Okay. That's
because I know. I think I put transmission on there. And there's a couple of others that I explicitly didn't do because I wanted to talk with you about it.
Okay.
I didn't put the password manager on there because that's...
Yeah, already.
That's also a very manual kind of a thing.
Like right.
That's when my inner sysadmin comes out and a lot of copy and pasting to make that work. So I'm happy to do that, but not for that. So as far as the specs that you would ask about... Oh, and just to... Before I get to the specs, just throwing it out there that a home-built NAS, I would throw kind of the big asterisk on, is that there is always going to be a certain amount of administration. You have to be kind of okay with tinkering with it.
Updates, or what do you mean?
Not just updates. I'm not going to say that it's not stable. Like, I've never lost any data on my NAS or anything like that. It's not that it's not stable, but it's the kind of thing where I've had issues with you run a major update and transmission kind of doesn't really know what to do with it.
Right.
So that also upgrading the applications that the plugins that it ships with aren't updated as frequently as the apps internally.
Okay. So before I forget to ask you this question, how many do you have? Like how many NAS do you have? Do you have one, two?
I only have one NAS.
You only have one NAS.
Yeah. I only have one NAS. I have a bunch of other random stuff. Lying around. Rocket Chat actually still hosts on a Raspberry Pi.
Okay.
For the moment, for other reasons. I have my little cable box up here. Okay. It's out of frame, but you know, I do have my own separate cable box, which is kind of cool. And stuff like that. But
is there a particular board, a motherboard that you like to use when you're building them, or particular drives that you like to lean towards when you're building those?
I've been. As far as motherboards, I do know that a lot of guys on the FreeNAS forums are big on having ECC RAM, like server-grade RAM, that will catch any sort of errors at a RAM level. And I've heard arguments back and forth about it. I'm not one to make that my hill to die on. I've read enough kind of counterpoints to it that I'm not super... big. I mean, if it's like going into production kind of a thing, that's kind of different. Like a company, that's a bit of a different story.
Right.
But for like my NAS doesn't run ECC RAM or that, like I don't go crazy on it.
But you could.
But if you are going to go that way, ASUS motherboards with the AMD processors that support ECC RAM, because you need all three of them to agree.
Okay.
The processors got supported, the motherboards got supported, and the RAM itself as well.
Okay.
And I have all three. Had all the best luck on those with the ASUS motherboards, but I think mine right now is an ASRock board that I'm pretty happy with. It's nice and quick.
I haven't heard of them. Are they
ASRock?
They're
pretty. I've been pretty happy with them. I don't do too many builds on them, but it just seems to be that they do more of the higher end boards with more of the BIOS tweaks and things like that. So lots of overclocking features in them and things, but they don't support ECC RAM,
okay.
As a matter of course. So I've done too many builds with them, but I've been happy with them. As far as drives, I've actually, believe it or not, I know I got a couple of guys in the industry kind of disagree with me a little bit, but I've been pretty happy with the Toshiba drives.
Okay.
Really,
the
four major companies that make them at this point are Western Digital, Toshiba, Hitachi or HGST,
okay.
And Seagate.
Okay.
I have all four of them in production at this point.
Okay.
In somewhere.
Spinning drives, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Trying to do SSDs, you can't afford that.
It's a lot of paper.
Well,
I mean, the drives.
Right. Right. Well,
themselves.
The drives, I mean, I've seen $500 drives, 500 gig drives go for inside $100.
Okay,
bucks right
so let's make a note here. I like how you said that I can't afford it because anything over $1 for me is expensive.
Yeah, well, it's not even that. It's that if right now your NAS has 8 terabytes of usable storage.
8 terabytes. Thank you, okay. Joey. I appreciate that.
Oh, go on to data hoarders. That's like pocket change over there. I mean, you know. There are guys over there with petabytes. That's, you know, 8 terabytes is...
I'm excited about the 8 terabytes.
It's a Fisher Price, my first NAS. Congratulations.
I'm excited about that. I'm pretty excited about it.
It'll take you a while to fill it in.
It's gonna be all right.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
But trying to go the SSD route, if you're going to get like the 500 gig drives to get that level of storage, you need 16 of them. And then...
Yikes.
I'll really need 18 to get any sort of fault tolerance. And then you need the RAID controllers to go on top of that. And that's going to be $200 a pop. Yeah. So, and then you need, you know, the extra cable support, you need a PSU and lots of splitters. I mean, by the time you're done with that, I mean, like you're in, you know, $4,000 or $5,000 range easy. So
is that a big request? Have you ever seen those requests come in for you or?
No, because at that point, then you even get bigger. Cause what's the point of having 16 SSDs if you're pushing it out a gigabit? So at that point, you even 10 gigabit's not going to be worth it. You want to go 40 gig.
Mm.
And if you're going to go 40 gigabit, then you need switches that, again, are going to cost you $4,000 or $5,000 on the low end. And then what are you plugging that into?
Right.
So at this point, as far as the stuff I've rolled out professionally, 10 gig is kind of about as high as I've gone with anything. And in most
10
of those,
gigs?
10 gigabit.
Okay, got it.
A network game.
Got it. Okay, got it.
Yeah, not storage. No.
Right. I was like, I was trying. Okay. No. Good.
10 gigabit networking is as fast as I've shuffled data out the door. And at that, you now have multiple clients to be working with. So you have, an office with 25 computers, all with gigabit connectivity that you're going to want to, that you'll see a performance difference with 1 gig versus 10 or 10 gig versus one, should I say. So that's kind of the bigger deal. But if you want that sort of performance, you're not asking me to build you one using off-the-shelf parts from Newegg and MicroCenter. At that point, you're talking about stuff that costs as much as my car. That's when you start talking about Ecologix and NetApp and EMC and all the other people who you really, really want to sponsor you. But that's when you're talking about that level of throughput requirements. You're talking about, massive databases. You're talking about things like video storage, like real-time video storage for things like sporting events and things like that would use something like that. But that's, again, you're talking car money, house money at that point.
So typically on a broadcasting ABC, NBC kind of format, what do you see or heard them using for platforms?
That's a completely different conversation. Again, we're talking like house in the Hamptons
house,
money.
House, yeah.
Okay, that's kind of. I mean, you get multiple commas in most of that gear because EDMS storage is very fast to get that many angles. I mean, think about how many cameras in the Super Bowl, and you may need to access any one of them for that slow motion play in real time.
Got it.
At 4K. Like, that's all got to go somewhere. So then you need to deal with, SDI switchers and stuff like that. Again, all that stuff is crazy money.
That sounds like a lot of cash. Okay, so RAM.
RAM.
Does that need RAM? Because I'm still.
Absolutely.
Okay, cool.
Absolutely. And I'm not going to lie, I think that the amount that's in there is a little bit anemic.
Okay.
It's kind of right at the cutoff. Kind of the rule of thumb is 4 gigs of RAM as a base, and then 1 gig of RAM for every terabyte of usable storage.
Mm-hmm.
So 12 is kind of what you'd expect. So 8 terabytes of usable storage plus a 4 gig base. You want 12 gigs of RAM, which is exactly what you got. I'd love to have been able to give you 16, but
it's all right.
It costs more than $1.
That's all right. It does cost more than $1. Okay, so that's that. All right. So so I'm going to leave that conversation because I know we can go really, really deep on the NAS stuff, but I definitely wanted the listeners and the viewers to hear, your knowledge in that particular space.
I'm going to throw one last quick thing before we switch gears.
Absolutely, go ahead.
And that is that if you aren't looking to have like a bit of a pet project, part of it is like doing a DIY kind of a thing. If you are looking for something that's more of like an in a box kind of a place to store stuff that's very easy to use and set up a configure and maybe a little bit less technical knowledge required, where dropping to a command line is just not something that is going to be considered a matter of course. I've been very happy with both Synology and QNAP. Synology being a bit easier to use and configure, and I've been very happy with those. And QNAP tends to be a little bit less expensive for some, especially when you get to like 4 and 8 bay units, they tend to be a bit less expensive. And their throughput tends to be a little bit easier. I'm sorry, their throughput tends to be a little bit quicker. Okay. So I've been very happy with them as well. But I do think that Synology is a little bit nicer to use. It's a lot more pretty and coherent. So I do like them for that.
What is the spinning thing, the little saucer thing that you put at the church?
Oh, those are wireless access points.
Okay.
That's a.
Well, did you use QNAP or anything like that at the church?
No, those are Ubiquiti.
Ubiquiti. Okay.
Yeah, we do have a QNAP NAS at the church, and that is our backup repository.
Got it.
So all of our backups go to a QNAP for that because it's just a big external hard drive for that. We don't really run anything crazy off of it. But I've been happy with both companies, and both products are very solid. So if you're looking for something a little bit easier and plug some drives in and go, both of them would be recommended.
Very cool. Very cool. Your writing. What's going on there? Your website?
I do have a blog, joeyfamiglietti.com.
How do you spell your last name?
FamiglietTi.
Okay.
I'm sure you'll throw that in.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we'll throw that underneath. That's down
right there. I've
always wanted to do that.
You link below?
Yeah.
It's all good.
It's just a personal blog. I don't have any particular topics that I spend a lot of time on.
I have a question for you right there.
Sure.
Why don't you promote it more? I know. That's the question I've always wanted to ask you.
All right.
And you get a chance to really think about it, because I don't see you, because the writing is great. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy the writing. Mm-hmm. I enjoy the topics that you cover. You know, one of the recent things that we're talking about was the Fortnite stuff, as well as the Unreal Tournament stuff, mm-hmm. and how you delved into those particular things and how it affected your, you know, outlook on, you know, the gaming industry, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. But you don't promote it.
Well, I guess.
As much.
I guess because a lot of the promotion that I see just in general, just that sort of the nature of promotion, is one of those, I don't like the feeling of just, you know, casting into the void and just being like, oh, go look at my blog. I swear it's totally, you know, got stuff that you care about. And also there's going to be stuff about faith and music and video games and random IT tutorials and stuff about the time when I went to the Bahamas. Like, you know, it's such a mixed bag that almost you have to know me personally in order to do it. I mean, I'll promote a particular blog post on a particular topic here and there, but on principle.
Right. That's Dad?
Yep.
Hi, Dad.
Hi, Dad.
Your blog.
Yeah, so it's promotion. More one of those things that's got to be, like, you almost have to know me personally. It's kind of like just a window into the inner workings of this, you know, balding noggin right here. That I don't think would be necessarily obvious. Like, you have a topic. You have kind of a brand kind of a thing, and it's, you know, about kind of grow the brand kind of a thing and being, you know, and growing that audience. And I'm happy when people read my blog. I'm happy when I get, you know, comments when I see the traffic spike, I'm like, oh, hey, some Russian bots like must love my blog or something. But it's not, it's more of an open journal kind of a thing. And if it is amusing or helpful to someone, hey, rock on. That's why I put it publicly instead of, you know, hosting it as a little WordPress thing on my NAS and keeping it private.
Okay, so but the thing is, one of the things I do realize is like, but the blog posts, as with most blog posts that we read, are intentional as you're journaling, right? Mm-hmm. So one particular blog post, we could spend maybe 5 to maybe 20 minutes on dissecting why you were saying, you know, this particular piece about that thing. And I think that because it's written well, because even your emails, when you write your emails, they're really like novels anyway.
Yes, they do have a brand
of themselves. Right. So I think that those things, if you consider, I know you do the Facebook stuff, maybe.
Very limited.
Twitter stuff, maybe.
I do not have a Twitter.
Right, that you would consider doing that, or even write it on the, I can't think of the platform right now that, I know type something, there's a platform for the blogging platform.
Well,
I'm drawing blanks right now, but essentially my point is, it's good stuff, mm-hmm. and it should definitely get more exposure, and then we'll put a link.
Well, no, I'm below. Awesome. I appreciate that. But a lot of it is also the principle. I mean, one of the big deals is I am not terribly trustworthy of cloudy things. You know, ask all the people who had their, you know, NSFW stuff on Tumblr, how that worked out for them. Mm. You know, that all got taken down. And even archive.org, who tried to save it, like for its cultural relevance, it got blocked from doing that. So even people who are trying to archive it weren't allowed to do that. Mm. So amongst the reasons why I have my own domain and my own WordPress instance and I don't use any social plugins or anything like that is because of kind of that principle that I'm big on owning my content. I'm big on the fact that, you know, my terms of service are pretty much, you know, that my hosting provider, that's kind of my compromise, is that I do have a hosting provider for it, but it's that there is no question about ownership of the content. There is no question about pretty much anything. As long as I pay the bill, I end up, you know, I don't use a god awful amount of the bandwidth and I'm not serving up illegal material, like they're really not going to do anything. Mm. A lot of the servers that you say are great and I'm not like knocking them wholesale. But I mean, if you really read the terms of service of them, it's the kind of thing that says, oh, hey, we can take your stuff off when it's convenient for us. And it's not something that I want to be beholden to.
Right. You don't want to be subject to that.
Yeah. So
very cool. Okay. So, I guess the other thing too, that we're talking about recently was the Unreal Tournament stuff. I definitely wanted to mention that, you know, as we, you know, wrap up, you know, the conversation. Yeah. One of your favorite games?
Definitely up there. I mean, Mass Effect is definitely, you know, my trilogy was a big one. Like, I pre-ordered Andromeda, that kind of Mass Effect fan. Definitely a big one. I'm really annoyed I'm not wearing my N7 hoodie right now because I left it at clients at work, and I'm going to circle back to them and pick it up eventually, but I digress. Unreal Tournament is, for those of you who don't know, it's what's called an arena FPS. One that some of your users, you got some
like,
of the...
Like Quake.
What?
Like Quake.
Like Quake or GoldenEye.
GoldenEye.
I know you're a console guy, you know, no one's perfect.
GoldenEye will consider arena?
What? I would kind of consider...
That's more multiplayer, right?
Well, that's still...
Well, the arena feel for me was really like the Quake-ish.
No, definitely Quake Unreal-ish. Is kind of one of the quintessential ones. I just kind of got started on Unreal Tournament when I was in college and kind of kept with it. I was big on Unreal Tournament 3, which I still like. And so for those who didn't read my blog post yet about it, so the short version is that... Couple of years ago, Epic Games, company that makes Unreal Tournament, released their new release, which annoyingly they did the whole, they also call Unreal Tournament, but like the, you know, in parentheses 2015. They don't actually call it that, but like that's kind of what it is because they did the whole thing where
the year matches the update. What is the year match for?
There isn't a year in the title. It's one of those things where we're going to use the original name, but it's the new one.
Got it.
Just to be confusing.
Got it.
And so, but they had a really cool way that they were going to do their business model, which was that the game is free. No free to play, no loot boxes, no pay mechanics in it. You don't pay for the game. The game itself is free. But you buy, but they had like their own little store where you could buy cosmetic items. And if you had any level of acumen for developing any assets, whether you can make maps or textures or mods or cosmetic items, you could sell them in the store and people could buy them. And so they'd take the cutoff of that. But also, Epic has been big on selling, has been big on licensing their engine. So if you've played Mass Effect, if you've played just so many games to count, I had a whole list of them. Even I think BioShock was also based on them. A bunch of really big games are based on their engine, and they get a cut of those.
I think that Scavengers game that's coming out.
Yes,
Scavengers is based also on that Spatial OS as well as the Unreal Engine.
Yeah. So that's big. Infinity Blade, even on iOS, was based on it. So so they get all the royalties from all those things. And so
was Hellblade on there?
I'd have to look.
I know Hellblade is Ninja Theory, but I don't know if they use that engine or not.
So the big news recently was that they formally discontinued producing Unreal Tournament. And I'm kind of not surprised because Epic kind of struck gold with Fortnite, which, you know, you had to be living under a rock to not be at least aware of in some capacity.
What's Fortnite?
I said, I'm going to another podcast. More of the competent host. But so they kind of stopped making any updates to Unreal, but I'm kind of not worried about it because one of the things that's really cool about Unreal that they kind of kept is the fact that we can still play offline. Like you don't need,
right?
You know, you can go from one IP to another over a LAN.
Will they still be serving updates to?
They haven't posted an update in nearly a year.
Okay,
so I'm not really of the persuasion that there's going to be a whole lot of active development unless someone really takes the mantle and does so. And I don't even know how that would work at this point.
Right.
But I think that Fortnite is big and will continue to be big for some time.
Right.
I mean, when Activision is putting a not Fortnite mode into Call of Duty, I mean, like that's
Blackout is dope.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty dope.
Oh, I'll have to play it sometime.
Come through, man. Come through the studio. I have it.
But you have it for PC?
Really? We're going to go there?
We can't cross-platform play.
Are we really going to go there?
Can we cross-platform play?
Are we really going to go there?
Well, I can't play against you.
I'm just letting you know that, you know, you're more than welcome if you want to come through and play it.
I appreciate it.
No problem.
All right.
No problem.
But I just think that because the engine is, I think that because the engine is such a big part of the business model that mm-hmm. Epic has, that that's going to be more the once Fortnite goes the way of Minecraft and Angry Birds and Cut the Rope and Quake before it, and as interest starts to wane, that the engine's going to keep on going. And I think that that it may be something that circles back to, because how great of a starting point is it to be able to encourage developers to start on a great tech demo and then build upon that, that, you know, as Epic faces competition in the engine space from Unity and Frostbite and there's one or two others that are still pretty big out there, that just having a fully playable, fully moddable tech demo is really a big thing. But I'm going to really mess with a couple of your viewers right now. But see,
in what way?
Because I'm about to tell them that the way that Unreal Tournament worked is all of the DLC was free. There was no such thing as paid DLC. There was no matchmaking. Okay, if you got into a public room and you got your butt kicked until you stopped getting your butt kicked, and
good times, man. Yeah, good days.
And you downloaded your maps that other players made, and you got inspiration to make your own. And it was just there's a whole community feel to modding the game,
which is still as active can be. Right, they're still doing that stuff.
I know ModDB still is around and there's still stuff. As a matter of fact, I started my 8th or 9th playthrough of Mass Effect, but they have some new high res, but I started my 8th or 9th playthrough of Mass Effect. And one of the mods that I added was a high res textures because, you know, an 11-year-old game, you know, doesn't age too well on Elsa here. So having those high-res textures really makes the game look a lot better. And so that's one of the mods I'm very grateful to be able to have. And there's still people who are modding stuff, but certainly not to the extent, I think, than was happening when that was the only way to get DLC.
Okay. So I'll share this with you while it's fresh because, you know, I know we're documenting a conversation. For many weeks, if not months throughout the year, you were saying, hey, man, when can we record something? When can we have a conversation about stuff? And I thought that this was more impactful and beneficial to the listeners as well as the viewers than what we originally thought we were going to do, which I don't even want to mention it because I think it's like it's not even something that should be even mentioned based on all the gems that you dropped on this particular conversation.
Okay.
So I definitely want to say that, you know, I know it took a while to even get mm-hmm. here. So that's definitely my bad. I'll take the hit for that. But I think that everything that you shared is beneficial for individuals who are even considering the networking stuff as well as, but I definitely want to challenge you to really consider pushing out your content more, especially for the blog stuff, because I think that you have some dope stuff there by way of conversation and your writing and stuff like that. What I will say, any last tips you want to give as we wrap up, definitely mention your blog again.
All right. My blog is joeyfamiglietti.com. Spelled JoeyFamiglietti.com. And because I get to do this again, it's down there. and there's a lot out there. And I'm glad that there's a lot out there. And, you know, as much as, you know, not every game appeals to me, not every piece of hardware or every company appeals to me. I'm glad that, you know, there are options out there. You know, keep playing, keep enjoying what you're doing. Hey, if you guys,
so let's do this because yes, we didn't talk about this at all.
Okay.
Okay. So what's the DJing stuff? Do you want to plug and promo that?
Not particularly. I know how that works. No, I'm not a club DJ. I'm not a producer, so I don't have a SoundCloud or a Mixcloud or anything like that.
But you do DJ.
I do, but it's mobile stuff. So if you're if you're getting married, you're having a Sweet 16, you're having a backyard party that you want to pay my rates for, you're welcome to talk to this guy, send this guy an email,
And oh, you're gonna point it to me? What? Send me not your contact on your blog?
Oh no, you get to be my screener, but I'll give you $75 for every party I get from this.
Interesting. Interesting. All right. It's been fun, man.
Yeah.
Well, it's been fun. Thanks for hanging out with me, man.
It's great. It's great having you.
So we're definitely going to make this into a podcast as well. So look for that. And guys, thanks for watching, and we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds great. Peace. Later.